All right, welcome to another Football Friday podcast. It's Carm, it's York. We're live at Twin Peaks in Warrenville. We haven't been here since COVID started. Oh, it's been way too long. It's been like almost 2 years. It's great to be back. We see some familiar faces. It's great to have the old fashioned on a Friday because they make a good one here. It is old fashioned week, so we had to have one. Week 7 in the NFL, Bears Bucks. That's the game we're going to talk about today, good kid.
Carm, you have that right. We are going to talk about this one, and it's one that looks impossible for the Bears to win. I'm a Bears fan, but I could paint a scenario on how the Bears could find a way to go ahead and win this one. It's going to take a lot of good fortune. It's going to have to take the Bears being very opportunistic out there. It's going to have to take the offense maybe doing something a little bit different than they normally do, but there's a way to go ahead and run against the Tampa Bay Bucks if you're willing to do it. And the question will be, are the Bears patient enough? Are the offensive coordinator patient enough? Will they be willing to go ahead? And if they lose a couple of yards, still stick with the running game, and that's going to be the mystery.
All right, so the daunting task here when we talk about the running game, we've talked about it all week, lies in the fact that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have one of the better rush defenses in football. Teams have kind of given up trying to run on Tampa. And I can tell you, I'll give you a stat that'll tell you exactly why we know that to be fact through six games that they've played. Teams are averaging just 16.3 run attempts per game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That is the lowest in the NFL. The Bucs are allowing only 3.4 yards per carry. Their success rate defensively, their line yards defensively, all these advanced metrics that we have are very, very good. They grade out very high. The one thing the Bears seem to do well on offense, and they don't do much well on offense, let's face it, they're pretty putrid offensively, is run the football. So Yerk has talked all week about still running the ball, just doing it in a different way. And you told us early in the week about the wham play. Can you, before you hit the whiteboard here, and Yurko already diagrammed the wham, he diagrammed two wham plays, just why is it even called the wham? How often is it used? Is it more of an old school running play, or is it still used in NFL offenses today?
Carm, it's like the shovel pass. You know, the shovel pass goes in and out of being popular. You know, somebody runs it, they score a touchdown with it, everybody sees it and says, hey, let's go ahead and run this shovel pass. So the wham play is an old school play. The reason they call it the wham, usually you don't know what's happening to you, and then all of a sudden, wham, you get hit upside the head. So that's why they refer to it as the wham play. It comes from a four-man side. You ask me, what's a four-man side? It comes from the side of the guard, the tackle, tight end, and maybe an offset back in a strong eye. Or if you put a tight end outside your regular tight end, they have two tight ends on the same side. One's off the line of scrimmage. He goes into a short motion, and he's either whamming the tree technique or he's ramming the nose, depending if you're playing an over and under four. So it'll either be Vita Vea or it'll be Donkey Kong Sue. Either one of them just depends on which side of the offense it's playing on. The guy offset on the nose, or is it going to be the three technique that you go after? But it does have to come from a four-man side. The key to running the wham is disguising the four-man side, so by the time they see it, it's too late, and you could really surprise the defensive tackle or the nose tackle. He doesn't realize it's coming. He thinks he's free, and then they cold cock him right in the side of the air.
All right. So for everybody here at Twin Peaks, they can see the whiteboard. Yurko drew up two of these. Let's start with the one on our left. Okay, Yurk? Let's look at that one first. Yeah, that one right there, all right? No, I was saying our left, like if we're looking. Yeah, that one right there. So you've got the four-man side set up this way with strong side, tight end, and then you have a back in the backfield, offset eye, and he goes in motion. That creates your four-man side at the snap of the ball, right? And then he's going to come back across the formation, and it looks like he's going to be taking a tackle that's – is that like heads up over the nose? That's a shaded nose. I'll explain that.
So that most likely will be Vita Vea right there. So we start out as power left, as I'm looking at it from the defensive side. A brown eye formation, which is a weak eye formation. We've got what they call F short motion. So it's the fullback in short motion. Okay? He's going across, and what they're going to do is the center's going to post the nose and release for the linebacker. Okay? The will. So leave the tackle there. The guard is going to go to the mic with an open influence like they're going to run a 36 zone play. So he's opening up, trying to lure the mic out to the outside. Tackle on the end. Tight end's got the Sam linebacker. So what you're trying to do is widen everybody out. Widen the interior of the defense out. And the fullback comes and smacks the nose tackle upside the ear. Running back gets the ball. The play is designed to get you about 6-7 yards. It's also designed to slow the defensive tackles down. If you've got an aggressive group of tackles, what you want to do is go ahead and slow them down. Now, that came out of a brown eye or a weak eye formation, shifting to a strong eye and running the wham on the nose tackle. The other play that we've got with the wham is a two tight end situation with one back and two wide receivers. Okay? In this one, we're going to get the three technique, and we're going to cornhole him in the air, and that would be Donkey Kong Sue. So what we do is we line them up. They're both on the same side. Now, you can motion from across, line up in two tights equal, motion them across and run the wham from there, or you can line the tight up outside, bring them back in motion, put them at the wing, and then bring them down. All of it's about disguising it. So they can't see they've got a four-man side and send alerts to the interior defensive people. That's the key.
So disguise is the key to this. If they're going to execute it and execute it properly, because you were saying earlier, you guys would know when you got down on the line, if you saw a four-man side, you kind of knew what was coming. Oh, bleep. Everybody heads up, especially the interior linemen. Wham plays coming. So the disguise is the key. Don't tip your hand and let them see that four-man side before the snap of the ball, right?
Yeah, that's the key. It's not to disguise it and get a little wider split, but these wider splits got to stay the whole time. So instead of a two-foot split, you go 2.5, create a little bit more room because of the massive size of the Tampa Bay defensive tackles. I'm going to run a couple of trap plays here on the interior, which I think are always effective against big guys that want to charge upfield. Let them take themselves out of plays. Once you slow them down, you go back to your regular running game. But if they're penetrating and causing chaos, you got to find a way to slow them down.
All right, Yurko's going to diagram a trap play. The other thing that makes it hard to run against Tampa, I don't think this is a surprise to anybody, Tampa scores a lot. Tampa scores a shit ton. We can swear because we're doing a podcast. We're not on the air right now. Tampa scores a lot of points. Tampa's offense is one of the best in the league. Metrically, old school counting stats, whatever you're looking at, Tampa's near the top of the league, pretty much top three in every statistical offensive category that's out there. They're healthy. They're a lot healthier than they were a year ago when the Bears played this team and they won. Antonio Brown wasn't on the team last year. Tom Brady wasn't totally in sync with the offense and with Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich last year. He is now, last year when the Bears played, I mean, and they won that game. That's another thing that makes it hard to run. We can sit here and Yurko can diagram all this and it sounds good and you can find ways to run. If they're down 17-3 in the second quarter, guess what? It kind of goes out the window. So part of staying in a game against Tampa and being able to run and do what you do best, run the football, is going to be trying to find some way, holding on for dear life, to make sure that Tom Brady and the Bucs aren't in the end zone every trip when they have the football.
All right, Carmen, the next play design, if you can hold it up, is a 32 trap right up the gut. And if you take a look, the center and the backside end, yeah, we got tight end left, we got ace formation, one back, three wide receivers. The center and the backside tackle are responsible for the tackle and the will linebacker. So they'll combo off, all right? You've got the offside guard, which is away from the tight end, pulling the trap, the front side tackle. Your guard is setting like it's a pass set to lure him upfield. He's blocking the defensive end. The tackle sets on the end but travels up to the Mike linebacker to get the Mike linebacker. So when you got over-aggressive defensive tackles, what you want to do is trap them. They take two steps forward. They're like, I'm not blocked. What just happened? The guard comes out. He cleans the hell out of them. It's a way to slow down the defensive tackles. That's what you're looking to do. And he's taking it out and cutting it right back in because he's influencing him, setting him up to tackle. And then when he gets cleared out, he's cut right back on the inside of that block.
Weak side guard clear.
So that's what you're looking for, weak side block. How do you handle aggressive defensive tackles? You trap them, you wham them, you draw them, and you go ahead and throw the screen. Number the four ways that you go ahead and you try to slow people down. It's hot in Tampa. Make them run right and left, too. I'd be tossing right and tossing left the whole day.
So one of Yurko's great philosophies that I've incorporated in my gambling over the years is the northern team traveling south late in the year. Because you get down, you play a game in Jacksonville, you play a game in Tampa, you play a game in Miami, outdoor stadiums in Florida, you're from the north. This time of year, you're not used to the warm weather, your blood is thinned out a little bit. Your blood's gotten heavier, is thickened up a little bit because the weather's getting cold, and you get down into the heat and the humidity, and you start to wilt. We've had great weather. Bears have probably practiced outside a lot lately. The weather's been relatively warm. Is this still the kind of game where it could be tough on the Bears just because the conditions? I'm going to Tampa tomorrow. I've looked at the forecast, 88, 90 all weekend. It's going to be hot in Tampa. Can that negatively affect the Bears?
It's not only the temperature, it's the humidity. So we played the Pittsburgh Steelers one time in September. We wore the white uniforms when I was in Jacksonville. They wore the dark uniforms. It looked like a triage unit in their place, the 4077. They had hangers hanging from the ceiling that were holding the IV bags. There were 20 hangers hanging from the ceiling because they were trying to get the IVs into their players, all cramping up. We destroyed them on that particular day. The Bears are going to have problems with the heat down there. They're going to have to hydrate. The hydrating starts today. It started yesterday. The minute you're thirsty out there, it's too late. You're already dehydrated. So they're going to have to stay on top of that stuff. And I know pickle juice. Carm's a big fan of the pickles, but pickle juice is real good for you out there.
I like them both.
Pickles and pickle juice. Who's not a fan of pickles? Come on. All right, other keys to trying to hang in this game. First of all, if they can run somewhat successfully, which nobody's really done against them, it does influence your play action, sets up your play pass a little bit more. They might be able to pick on Tampa's D in the secondary. I mean, that's one area where this team is depleted and banged up right now. For as good as they are defensively against the run, they're equally as bad against the pass. They're 25th in success rate right now, their pass defense, 25th in success rate. That is not good. That means teams quite often are converting on what we deem successful plays per down against Tampa's pass defense. Then you've got this issue of their blitzing, and Todd Bowles is blitzing. He blitzes a lot. Even on first and second down, even on early downs, he blitzes a lot. If you're in third and long, you are fucked. Justin Fields is a young quarterback. The Bears will be completely fucked if they get themselves in third and long situations because Todd Bowles is going to be sending a lot of exotic, creative things his way that he's probably never seen that he might not be prepared for. Early down success is going to be a key. If you can stay in third and short, that's going to help them. Try to get them away from blitzing as much as they want to on third and potentially fourth down.
I like the direction you had there, Carm. I'm glad you kind of alert everybody to exactly what's going on and how aggressive these guys are. So how do you stop people from being aggressive, too, with the blitz? The Bears have been reluctant to go deep, especially when Andy Dalton was the quarterback. They did it against Detroit, but they haven't really done it against anyone else. Two of my first passing plays would be four vertical. Even if I'm doing three wide receivers with Cole Kmet, I'm still going four vertical. I want to put the defensive backs on the back foot. I want them thinking about backpedaling first, not just hesitating, kind of moving their feet back and forth and then charging forward. I want to get them thinking about going backwards. So I'd like to go deep. I'd like everybody to go deep. And listen, it's not a complicated throw. You hit your back foot on five and you just chuck it up in the air to one of your wide receivers. The one that you trust the most is probably the best one. With the back releasing late, in case you don't want to go downfield, you throw it to the back and hope that he can break a tackle and get a big gain there. But one of the first things I'm doing is going deep downfield when I decide I'm going to pass the ball. Go deep forever.
Release the accordion effect, as Yurko calls it. You don't go deep, teams know how to squeeze you, and that's never good. The Bears' most successful personnel package most of this year, if you look inside their metrics, are in 12 personnel. So it's a running back and two tight ends. It allows you the ability to keep a tight end to block. If you think you're going to block five, I don't think the Bears have the offensive line. I don't think most teams do to block with just five. You can go heavy personnel, right, Yurk, and still make plays in the pass. So much so that, listen to this stat. When the Bears pass out of 12 personnel this year, first of all, they have a pretty decent success rate. They're over 50% in success rate when they pass out of 12 personnel. They're averaging 11.2 yards per attempt when they pass out of 12 personnel. When they've got three wides on the field, They're averaging 5.1 yards per attempt. They more than double when they do have a heavier personnel package in, a sixth offensive lineman in to help protect Justin Fields. They can get the ball down the field more. Again, that is more than double in your yards per attempt when they're passing with two wides on the field versus three.
So the theory is when you've got three wides on the field, they'll put a nickel out there. So the nickel guy's better able to go ahead and cover whatever you're going to provide in that three wide package. When you come out with double tights and only one running back, that is usually a run formation, probably 75-25 run. So when you do pass out of it, you've got that third linebacker that may have to cover one of your better tight ends and gives you a little bit of an ability to have some success, depending upon how you start stacking those wide tight ends. The other thing is 64, Barnes is going to be key in this game. He may be the tight end that's involved in all the whamming that's going to be happening. So look for 64 when he's in the game. But every once in a while, you got to run him out on a pass pattern. Otherwise, if it's 100% run every time he's in there, every once in a while, you got to go ahead and pass the ball just to be a tendency breaker when he's out there.
64 eligible. We saw that a lot, two games ago against the Raiders, I feel like, right? Wasn't he 64 eligible quite a lot in that game? All right, let's start wrapping up. Final thoughts, Bears and Bucks for Sunday. You made an interesting point today on the show. You said everybody just assumes Brady's going to be so motivated to get the Bears back after losing last year, and he forgot the downs holding up four. Look, this is a team that was still sort of lost and confused even a month after the Bears game. Thanksgiving last year, most of the rhetoric and narrative around the country about the Bucs was, they're not as good as we thought. What's wrong with the Bucs? Did Brady make a mistake? He and Arians aren't getting along. And then December hit, and they won eight straight in December and January and February and won the Super Bowl. Did he use any of that motivation that maybe he had from people shit-talking him and forgetting the downs to go ahead and storm his way all the way to a seven Super Bowl ring? It's an interesting theory. Something tells me Brady still remembers forgetting the downs and losing on Thursday Night Football to the Bears last year. And he seems to be the kind of guy that holds grudges. And I think he's pissed off to have I think he's fired up to go out there and have a good game on Sunday.
So my theory is that his satiation came from winning all the games and winning the Super Bowl. And then getting drunk, getting hammered, and tossing the Lombardi trophy from boat to boat and having fun. He's forgotten what's happened with the Bears last year. Even if he says he remembers, he doesn't. You're hoping to catch them sleeping down in Tampa Bay. That's what you're looking to do. The offense hasn't been able to put up more than 24 points this year. Am I right, Carm? They've put up under 24 times, four games. So the offense has got to find a way to score. If they don't, the Bears have got to find a way to make things easy for them. Even Matt Nagy this week talked about the Bears defense trying to get them some easy red zone opportunities because even he doesn't have faith in his offense. So the defense is definitely going to have to help. They're going to have to keep it close. If they can keep this thing at a 10-10 game at halftime, if it's 10-10 at halftime, and it could happen. Don't look at me, Danny from Schaumburg. 10-10 at halftime, I'm giving the Bears a better than average chance of finding a way to get a victory in this one. But if they crap the bed and they look like crap in the first quarter, this could be the ugliest game we've seen since Mark Trestman was here.
Which nobody wants to think about. If it's 10-10 at half, oh my God, then they're going to have a good chance to not only cover but steal a game potentially. Does seem to be kind of a strong correlation if you like the Bears to playing the under for people that like to do parlays, same game parlays and things like that. Back in the old days in Vegas, if you would have walked into a book and said, I want to parlay the Bears in the under, they would have told you to go spit. They call that a non-correlated parlay. They don't want you parlaying those kinds of things because the book knows they're at a disadvantage. Seemingly, if the Bears are going to stay in a game and steal a game, as a cover, getting 12.5 points, that the game would have to go under because of the proliferation of sports gambling and everybody competing in the space now. These websites are like, yeah, sure, go ahead and correlate your parlay. So if you like it, it would seem to stand to reason that if the Bears are going to cover 11.5 or 12 or 12.5, that the under would be the play. I know our buddy Todd Furman thinks there could be some reverse correlation here, but I don't know. If the Bears are going to stay in it, steal a win, be a live dog at any point, you'd have to think under the 47. But that would be some job by this defense to hold Tampa Bay down like that because the offense has just been so good.
And it's the one thing Carmen and I do. We like to build your pocketbook on Saturdays so you've got a couple hundred or a couple thousand ready to rock on Sunday. So my DraftKings three-team parlay special is Penn State minus 23.5. They're going up against the hapless Fighting Illini. Michigan minus the 23.5. They're going up against the woeful Northwestern Wildcats. And Oklahoma, get this one here, Oklahoma minus 38 points. That's right. You're giving points away. It's a three-team parlay. Bet yourself one unit, walk away with six.
First of all, those are three heavy favorites. That's not going to be a very lucrative parlay.
Well, it's 6-1. You're giving up the points.
You're right. It'd be 6-1 probably. You got a lot. Yeah, you're not playing a money line parlay because you're giving up the points.
6-1.
Yeah, that's good luck to you. Although Kansas, Northwestern, and Illinois are about as bad as you get, so you could be right. All right, Bears. 10-10. Geez, I keep going back to that. The Bears would be in this thing. I can't see them winning. Unfortunately, I'm not even sure they're going to cover. This seems to be like a two-touchdown win for Tampa. What do you think?
Carm, I painted a picture of how the Bears could do it, right? This is what I spent all day here, Twin Peaks, trying to get the Bears fans a little bit excited for this. But I'm a realist, and the realist in me realizes the Bears have no shot in Tampa Bay, unfortunately for them. They're going to go down there, and they're probably going to end up getting their asses kicked, even if Robert Quinn can't play. This is going to be an ugly, 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 ugly day. If Quinn can play, it'll be less ugly. Mark this one up. The Bears go 3-4, and they got to find a way to make headway against the rest of the NFL.
San Fran next week.
Then they get San Fran the week after. But at home, more winnable. Bears minus 3.5 in the early look ahead line for next week against San Francisco. All right, that'll do it. That's Week 7's breakdown, Football Friday. Great X's and O's from Yurko, too. Saw a trap. You saw a couple different formations where they could wham you. And we love that. Four-man side. Look for the four-man side on Sunday, everybody, as you watch Bears and Bucks, and you'll say, I know what's happening. Yurko told me about the four-man wham. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for coming out to Twin Peaks for another Football Friday.